Let's cover a couple of things then about Pas Yisrael. So a couple, trying to focus somewhat on the way that it translates into the kashrus industry and things like that. It is one of the, as I think I've said before, most of the halachos in Basar V'Chalav and Taruvas don't come up that often in the kashrus industry, so much because hopefully you've set up a system to avoid all of those issues, right? These are the things that actually have to look up and figure out and how are we going, and there's some machlokism out there, there's even some disputes amongst the various agencies about some of these halachos, so I'll try to discuss some of that. Okay, so tonight trying to cover Simon Kufyud Beis, right? Simon of Pas, Palta, Pas, Yisrael, etc. So the Gemara itself, the Mishnah itself, talks about that there was a prohibition that was established about that we shouldn't eat, that bread should only be made by Jews, and it seems like from the Gemara itself that there was already a concept of Ein Efshar Lamud, but the people were not able to handle that based on the Pasuk Al Lachem Levado Yichya Hadam, but it's really, I mean, Lo Al Lachem Levado Yichya Hadam, that it's not on bread alone that we survive, but it's almost the way we survive, it's pretty important, so therefore because of the difficulties involved in being able to say we're only going to eat what we refer to as Pas Yisrael, so it just became a difficult thing to maintain. Now, what exactly does that mean? That's where you fall into this machlokas, a big machlokas Rishonim. Now, first of all, it is interesting. This section of Shulchan Aruch, from Simon, Kufyud Beis, Kufyud Gimel, Kufyud Dalet, etc., is one of the few areas where consistently the Rama is more makil than the Mechaber. Right. Generally, when you're learning through Basar V'Chalav and Taruvas, generally the Mechaber had some like interesting kula, like, and then I was like, yeah, but I don't really know again. Like, we're not knowing to have any of these things. But all of a sudden, he shows up in this halachos, and very much so in Bishul Akum. You've covered Bishul Akum also already. Okay, so certainly very much in the Bishul Akum area. So there are significant kulas that the Ashkenazim have over Sephardim. The historians would say because Ashkenazim had more dealings with Gaim and lived amongst Gaim, and you certainly get the impression from Rishonim that that there were certainly cities of Frum people that like had 10 families in it, like they were sometimes very very small groups and had to figure out how they're going to eat amongst with non-Jews and also work and also do business and things like that. So in the areas having to do with non-Jews, I shouldn't just say these couple of sifim, but really through Hilchos Avodah Zarah and Hilchos Ribbis and things like that, there are probably more kulas for Ashkenazim than there are for Sephardim. Now, ironically, a lot of these areas Sephardim end up being mekel like the Ashkenazim, right? Especially in Bishul Akum. We'll save that for next time. But in theory, the Ramah often ends up being mekel. So there is a kula. I mean, there's certainly everybody agrees that the Chumrah of Pas Yisrael is not applicable the way, or the Gezerah, we should say, of Pas Yisrael is not applicable as the way it was first established. How that was nullified, it's a question, probably a historical question, probably not so lemaisa. But what exactly that means that it was nullified, that itself is a question, right? So that ends up being a machlokas. The Rambam is a little bit vague as to what he says, but the Rambam says, the way he's understood, at least by the Shulchan Aruch, at least the way I is that it's if you don't have any bread accessible and you're out in the field. I mean, the Rambam it's unclear if the Rambam is either or. I mean, is end or. I mean, it's unclear, but at least the Mechaber understands it, the Beis Yosef understands the Rambam that way, which essentially means that it is pretty much fully enforced. If you're really, really out in the sticks someplace, then maybe you have the right to be Makel. So there's neither the Mechaber nor the Rambam paskin like the Rambam. The Rambam is extra machmir. That's why I was curious if the Chabad is holding like the Rambam, which maybe they are, but I don't know. Then there is the Rashba and the Mordechai. So the Rashba is so that's spelled out in Shulchan Aruch Sif Beis, right? Where the Rechaber says Yish Makom Shemakim B'Dar V'Lochim Pas Minachtum Ovikol Chavim Makom She'ein Sham Nachtum Yisrael. He says that if there's no Jewish baker, so then you're permitted to purchase from non-Jews Shehi Shasarchak. Was that already is considered to be a Shasarchak? And the Ramah comes and says, nah, even if there is Pas Yisrael around, still it's going to be Mutter. That's the Ramah, quoting from the Mordechai, or known as the Shita of the Mordechai. So that is the specifically Machlokas Svarim Mashkin. Other Svarim seem to say that it would require a Shasat Chak for you to go and go ahead and buy a past Palter. While the Ramah is like, even if there is past Palter available, if there is any advantage to buying the past Yisrael, to buying the past Palter, it is Mutter. So what does that mean, any advantage? So you could read it as, well, it has to be like a steep price or some kind of big thing. But at the end of the day, the Chelkas Binyamin, did you come across, introduce you to my friends here. But the Chelkas Binyamin says, really, any advantage, meaning advantage of this one is lower on the shelf, and even at the same price, this one is lower on the shelf. This one, is fresher. This one, whatever, is one has the right to be makel, which is why in most, I could say, Ashkenazi home, or most, say, non-Orthodox, and even somewhat, even going into the yeshiva world somewhat, they're pretty much straight up makel on Pas Yisrael, totally. So, right, so all crackers and cookies and things like that. So all the kashrus organizations are pretty much makel, like all these halachos as well, right? So Starkei is machmer on Chol of Yisrael, but not machmer on Pas Yisrael, and other things as well. So generally, even the okay is makel on Pas Yisrael. They'll give hechsherim to Pas Palter. They will permit that. Now, one thing that we got to remember, though, is that there is no heter for what we call Pas Bali Batim, right? There's a third level, which you often don't think about, but if a non-Jew invites you over to their house and they cook the entire thing, or even if they baked in your house, it sounds like, right? That would be a real problem, right? If they would bake from beginning to end, which could come up. I mean, if you have a maid in the house, or I could see a situation of a convert or something like that, and they have their parents come to visit, and oh, mom, I always remember the wonderful cake that you made around this time of year. Could you make it here? You could use my kalim, and it's totally kosher, and you could use it right here, right? So that actually would be a problem, right? You would need that. That would be considered to be pas bali batim. Now, the truth is, even there might be some kulas, because what is the reason that pas akum became? What's the underlying theory behind all of this?
Kiddushin.
Through marriage.
Kiddushin intermarriage. All right, Nishim Chasnus. Yeshivas, they say Chasnus, right? The problem of Chasnus, the problem of intermarriage. So
you're not going to marry your parents.
Right, right. So if there is sort of an impossibility of that happening, right, so maybe then there's room to be makel. I think generally on that there's a low plug, but where that comes up a little bit more sharply is the issue of a non-religious Jew. Right, so someone who is a non-religious Jew, do they count towards do they count as Yisrael for these purposes? So not all non-religious Jews are created equal. If you would consider them to be what we call it, Chal Shabbos for Hesya, like a full-fledged 100% apikoros and all those kinds of things, right? So that they lose sort of the privilege of being considered Yisrael for these purposes. But that's not generally the case that we come across. I believe they say in Ben-Gurion comment, one of the older Zionists commented that we aimed to create a generation of apikorsim, and instead we created a generation of Amaratzim. Right? So that's generally the situation that we're confronted with. People just aren't from. So what is their status with regards to these halachas? So there is a bigger reason to be makel here, which is there's no Isser of Chasnus involved. Right? So the whole reason for the Gezerah is Chasnus. So then perhaps there's more of a reason to be makel here than there would be in other situations. And probably Meikar Adin, that probably is the correct thing. I think in the Chosos of Yamin, he paskins a lakula on that question. However, most kashrus agencies are machmir on this question. So we don't consider somebody who's not Shomer Shabbos ra'i to be turning on the flames or ovens or any of those kinds of things across the board, provisional akum, pas akum, etc. Okay, so that is that. Next, there is a chumr here in the shach. The shach in Sif Zayin says this whole thing is a that will be makel. What's the story? We're going to be makel in a place where there is no kosher, there's no Jewish owned bakery, so therefore we'll be makel on pas palta, right? So we think about a city further out there someplace, right? And all we have is this, or all we have are things that come from machines, right? So therefore we're going to be makel and allow us to have the mass-produced Oreo cookies out in the middle of nowhere. So comes the Shach here and says, well, says Dafka Pas Ovi Kulchavim. He says this whole heter of Ovi Kulchavim is only Pas Ovi Kulchavim. Aval Pas Yisrael Sha'afu Ovi Kulchavim. The Torah says Shelo Nagu B'Shum Makom Lahatir. He says this whole thing is if it's a non-Jewish owned bread that a non-Jew is making. But if a Jew owns the bread that a non-Jew is making, says the Shach in the name of the Torah, we are going to be machmir on that question. The heter pas palter doesn't apply. Why would that be?
In the case in,
well, who's the no, no, this is not pas balabatim. This is let's say best cake. Best cake is Jewish owned, right? And from the guy, he's a from fellow that owns it, Paul. He's a from guy whose name happens to be Paul.
So it's open again.
What?
So it's open again.
Yes, yes, it's an open, right? So that's first newsflash. It's open again. He does plan on making donuts for Pesach as well, for Hanukkah as well. Not Pesach, for Hanukkah. What?
Is there a new baker?
He is. Well, he has other. There are people working there, but he is still the main owner, right? No comment. Not on tape. It's Jewish owned. But let's say he. So everything there is passes Shom. He comes in the morning, he turns everything on, etc. But what if he wouldn't turn everything on, right? So according to this,
he would hire a non-Jew.
And he has a non-Jewish worker. So you have best cake being baked by, Pablo, right? He comes in, he turns on the fire. So you say, well, Pablo's a palter. Pablo's a baker. So what's the big deal? So according to the Shach, no, it's worse. If it's a Jewish-owned bakery with a non-Jewish worker, that makes it worse. That makes it worse. Why? So the implication, it sounds like because once you're the owner already, so then it's the idea that Pas Yisrael is not Matzoi, that's a joke. What do you mean it's not Matzoi? You own the place, right? So go and turn on the fire.
Sorry, what does Matzoi mean?
Matzoi means it's found.
Ah.
Right? So it's found. So what do you mean it's not available, right? That's what he right. The field of Makum Shapas Yisrael Matzoi Shari, even a place where it's found, it's going to be mutter. That's what the Rama says. But what do you mean it's not you can't find? It's
like the owner
Jewish owns the place, right? Right. So that is this Shach is the Shach says something like that, we listen, right? The Shach is a pretty authoritative source on that, and we, in theory, would be machmer on that. Now, this becomes a bigger issue about, I assume he's not Jewish, but let's say Mr. Entemans is Jewish, right? So Mr. Entemans is Jewish, he owns factories all over the place, or Mr. Nabisco is Jewish, not saying they are, saying they could be, right? And they own the Nabisco factory, right? So we say, well, we're not going to allow Pas Palter from Nabisco or from Entemans because it's owned by a Jew. So this sefer here, the creatively entitled Pas Yisrael and Bishul Yisrael, is written by Rav David Cohn. So Rav David Cohn is he's not really the posig, but the large kashrus agencies have is they have their poskim, right? So the star case of Heinemann, the OUs, Rav Schechter, was Rav Belsky, now Rav Asher Weiss, Rav Reichenach to some extent, right? I'm not sure who's at the OK, who's right? The Chafke had Rav Felder, and now they have a full basin that they go to, etc. Right? But they often have somebody. Right, when Rav Schechter is the poskim for the OU, so that means he goes in once a week. It's known he goes in Friday morning. So I know if I have to call Rav Schechter, sometimes the easiest way of getting a hold of him is to call the OU on Friday mornings. But he's not there all week, and they don't want to ask him the same questions over and over and over again. So generally, there is somebody on staff at this, at least on CRC and the OU. I'm not sure officially there's anybody like that at the Star K, who is in charge of like keeping the notes and keeping track of all the halachos. So like the OU, they have like full arranged files of every written tshuvas by Rav Schechter, Rav Belsky, some Rabbi Ganak, Rav Asher Weiss, etc., who passed the shiles. And this fellow, at the OU happens, his name is Rabbi Eli Gersten, or at the the CRC, it's Rav David Cohn, right? Rav David Cohn actually left the OU to the CRC I'm not sure what the difference was in positions, but that was his job. So anyway, so these people are generally very, 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 very organized and very good with writing and things like that. So he published several svarim that are along the lines like this, and this one happens to have, at the end of every chapter, it says, oh, by the way, what's the official CRC policy on such a matter? So he points out here, I forget where he based it on, but he says that in the case of a large factory, this idea falls away, meaning to expect that Mr. Entemans, to expect that Paul Spangler is going to be there every morning and turn on the fire, that's a worthwhile expectation. To expect that Mr. Entemans is going to go around the country to every plant, making sure that every fire is turned on, or actually, I got a better example, Insomnia Cookies. Right? Insomnia Cookies is Jewish-owned, Frum-owned, by the way, although not he sold a significant amount of the company, but to start, you can read the Insomnia Cookies story online. A guy named Seth Berkowitz, he was in the University of Pennsylvania, so he was making his cookies and selling them, and that's how Insomnia Cookies came to be. Now there's 500 stores across the country. And they're all passepalter because essentially they're getting dough and they're baking it on premises. That's how Insomnia Cookies are made. So I'm going to expect that Seth Berkowitz is going to travel around to every single Insomnia Cookies around the country every morning turning on the fire, right? That doesn't make any sense. So once it becomes a very large company, so then this shach falls away. That's the official, that's the CRC, and all the kashrus agencies follow that. Otherwise, you'd have a bigger problem.
Is the distinction like so the shach is talking about a privately right. owned thing, whereas when it becomes like a corporation, because it's like a subtle difference, right? Are you talking about a large
right.
company with many plants but privately
right.
owned
so,
versus a corporation that's publicly owned?
Right. So,
so
I don't think you were being machalic that way. I think we're being machalic between small and large now.
Okay.
How small is small, and when does it's like the beard problem? When does a beard become a beard?
What? If it's big enough, then it's not really matzah anymore.
Right. So how do you define that? Meaning, at some point you trip the wire. Like, right. how do you do
it's
that?
It's just not practical.
Right. So I'm not sure that I don't know about. At what point do we decide that that's going to be the case? But that is that's important halacha to keep in mind. Meaning they're all officially Pas Yisrael, but right, Rollins is Pas Yisrael, and who else is baking around here. In Judah's they are baking a little bit, right? So that's a Pas Yisrael. So those places, yeah, it's got to be, it's not just, it sounds like it's not enough. You can't just bake there and say it's not Pas Yisrael. It has to be, like if it's a small place like that, I guess you would say where the owner is there relatively every day, right? So that actually would become a chiyuv for it to be Pas Yisrael, at least the things that are made there. It doesn't mean that they can't sell things from outside that aren't, right? But at least the things that are made there would have to be Pas Yisrael. Rav Moshe makes that distinction, large versus small bakeries, but I'm not sure if he, how he divides those up. There is a discussion about, so that, by the way, that's Rav David Cohen. The Chalkas Binyamin is actually Rav Binyamin Cohen, no relation. I mean, I assume they're both descendants of Aaron and Cohen, probably cousins. But Rav Binyamin Cohen probably came across the Badi Ashulchan. So the Badi Ashulchan is Rav, that's Rav Feifel Cohen. So Rav Binyamin Cohen is his son. Yeah, he's a Rav in Flatbush someplace. He's published a bunch of svarim in the same way that his father did, like sort of like a Mishnah Berurah type, Mishnah Berurah Bir Halacha style page. So he works through all of these sugyas, as well as he's gotten Hilchos Ribbis and a couple of other areas of Halacha. So very important. So Chalkas Binyamin makes the following point with regards to this din. What about if there's nobody around? There's no Jewish baker around, and then Sif Dalid, if there's no Jewish baker, so you're allowed to buy the paspalter. Now, what about if a Jewish baker shows up? So the paspalter is usser until the Yisrael baker sells all his stuff. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean, let's say you already bought stuff from Charles Smith's bakery, right? And then Feivel Goldstein moves into town. So I already have stuff in my freezer from Charles Smith's bakery. Does that mean like it becomes no good. So the assumption is that no, that if you bought it, it's you can't say that like, you know, that the first half of the sandwich is kosher and the second half of the sandwich is all of a sudden becomes not kosher because all of a sudden a Jewish baker showed up in town. Right, that's a little hard to say. So Rabbi Binyamin sort of turns it around a slightly different nuance. He says, what about the following? What about if I was out of town, so I was out in the middle of nowhere, so I bought some Entenmann's, and then I fly back into town. And in town, there is a pas readily available. So I'm generally machmer on it when I'm in town. So does that mean that the donut that's in my bag, does it become not kosher at this point? So you could be machalik between those two cases. I mean, one of them is I didn't do anything. The same bread was in front of me, and then just because someone else moved into town, this bread turns over from being not kosher to kosher. But Binyamin Cohen is on the side of saying, I don't think you would say that. I think once you have it in your possession and you bought it beheter, so it's not going to all of a sudden become iser just because you moved. Okay?
It certainly seems bishas hadchak if you already own it.
Right.
Because then it's wasteful.
Right, okay. I mean, I'm not sure. Wasteful is...
You have to throw it out?
Yeah, I'm not sure I would call that a halachic term, wasteful. Meaning, it's not baltashnis. Came across, actually, just this week. Where did I see it? Whatever. Baltashnis, for the purpose of a chumrah, is generally not considered baltashnis. I'm trying to think where exactly I came. I saw that like this week. Was it Nogaya for Hanukkah? I don't remember. But that is the standard. Meaning, if there's some halachika, meaning Pesach, right? So burning all the chametz and burning extra chametz and getting rid of stuff that might be chametz, right? There we're much more machmer. How are you allowed to be machmer? Isn't it about tashkas? Even before, it's all meaning. If I'm doing it for the purpose of a mitzvah, it's no longer about tashkas. There's a purpose already involved with it. Okay. That's the general rule. Okay, and now we can get into the probably the most controversial aspects of these halachos of Pas Yisrael, and that is in a commercial environment. So there's these types of commercial environment. There's commercial environment factory, big factory. There's commercial environment bakery, and there's commercial environment like a place like Giant. Right, so Giant is officially Pas Yisrael. Any former Giant workers here? No. Okay. So Giant is Pas Yisrael, employing some of these principles that we're going to talk about. So the Gemara itself talks about a pretty makel as to the amount of involvement a Jew actually needs to have. In Sif Tes, the Shulchan Aruch says that if a non-Jew lit the fire, and a Jew baked the stuff, meaning a Jew put the stuff in, or the opposite, a Jew lit the fire, and a non-Jew baked the stuff, or the non-Jew lit the fire and baked the stuff, and a Yisrael came and niyar eishma'at, and like adjusted the fire somewhat, or added to the fire somewhat, hareza mutter. Okay, so those are the three scenarios, right? Scenario one, all of these are good, meaning a non-Jew lit the fire and a Jew bakes, a Jew lit the fire and a non-Jew bakes, and a non-Jew lit the fire, a non-Jew is baking, and a Jew comes along and adds to the fire a little bit. Vafilu lo zarak ela eitz echad, and even throws in just a little piece of wood, right? L'toch ha-tanor, heitir kol ha-pashiva. All the bread is going to be mutter, she'ena davar el yos heker, she'apas shalahen asur. Plus the whole purpose is for it to be a heker, that the pas is, that their pas is asur. Therefore, I have to do something. So even though what I'm doing is not really, really having a material change to anything, still, that's already sufficient. And the Ramah then adds in, v'im nafach be'esh havikachitoi. And just blowing on the fire, right, in order to increase it, that's good too. That's already considered to be chitoi. So we're not talking about that much that is necessary in order for it to be Pas Yisrael. Okay, so one thing that has become in style that some have suggested. This is we'll just use the names, right? So the Star K, Rav Heinemann, came up with the idea called the glow bar. Anybody heard this term? The Globar.
I've heard of a light bulb.
Light bulb, Globar, right. These are all these types of things. All right, what is the Globar light bulb, things like that? So they put a light bulb that's on into the oven, right? You could have an electrician put it in, or I don't know, even more Hamish.
Is it a proprietary device, or it's just like turning on the oven light?
So it is not what do you mean proprietary device?
Like it's a special device that the Star K came up with.
No. I'm not sure exactly what they what it is. I mean, we looked into doing it a little bit here. There's the limitation on it is that you need to know when it extinguishes. So we actually try to get it. You're supposed to have it wired into the system. Otherwise, there's no hashgacha on it, right? So. So that's where it's complicated. Meaning, you know, you need an electrician that's comfortable going into the machines and like doing this, and you need an owner that's comfortable letting.
It's not just turning on the oven light. It's a little more than that.
I mean, maybe that would work, but maybe that would work on those scenarios. But you would need someone to turn the light on. You would need that to happen.
All right. So right? I may be mistaken.
The purpose here is that it's on all the time.
From the time the oven starts on?
From even before. From the time you turn it on, from this point on, it's going to be passi sur. What's the point? The point is that it's adding heat to the thing. So some suggest the Globar might be better, it adds more heat or whatever. But the purpose is that you have this little bit. This is considered to be the Eitz Echad, right? The little piece of wood that is being in there. And it's consistently adding to the flame, right? It's always in there. And therefore, it's always considered to be adding to the flame. And therefore, that resolves all pass Yisrael problems. By the way, this even would then include Shabbos, right? That's what goes here and here, a giant, right? All the bread here is pass Yisrael, even though it's baked on Shabbos, right? I mean, not all the bread is baked on Shabbos, but even the bread baked on Shabbos is considered to be pass Yisrael because there was a Jew that was involved in the baking process. So that's their suggestion. Now the Shulchan Aruch here, those that raise tainas on the Globar, the OU, right? Those that raise tainas, so they say, wait a second, that's not enough, because the Shulchan Aruch actually gave a reason, right? All you really need is a hecker. Now, that is a machlokas. Not everybody agrees that all you need is a hecker. That's a machlokas. The Tosos and the Rush say that, no, you actually need to contribute to the baking. Now, is that really contributing to the baking? Well, you can make a case and say, well, it must be adding something, but often it's not. Often it's like a, you know, if you imagine a pizza oven, right? So it's usually like stuck right to the front of the pizza oven, and everything else is being baked. Is that really impacting the heat in the oven? So that's hard to say. So therefore the OU policy is that no, it's not enough for it to just be someplace in the oven. No, it needs to actually be integrated into the heating system, right? So if, for example, Tasty Twisters, right, the pretzel bakery, right? They have people have gone and lit the fire on, right? So you know what I'm talking about, right? Manioc, right? So essentially, this pretzel factory, the same thing with Center City Pretzels, is he has a oven that goes from here to the front of the room or so, right? That's about the size of this oven. There's a belt, and it goes on through the belt and comes out the other side, and all of a sudden it's a beautiful pretzel. So the in order for it to be pass Yisrael, it's not enough to just put a light bulb here in the front, because that's not going to have any impact in the back. You need it to be actually contributing to the heat someplace along the way where the baking is actually taking place. So therefore, it has to be integrated into the system. So that oven cost someplace in the realm of $500,000 to $1 million, right? So to tell the owner, by the way, we want to make it pass Yisrael, and we're going to get into the wiring and void your warranty, right? So he's not really so interested in, not so excited about that.
Just to clarify, because I always heard of the Globar as being just a light bulb, which obviously it's not.
Well, it might be. It could. I mean, the old style globe. I think the old style was to stick in a light bulb. In response to this taina, they've added this Globar, which became more integrated into the system.
And so, the more integrated version, the idea is that you install it, the mishgiach or whoever turns it on.
Right.
And then it just stays on. You never touch it again.
In theory, that part is never touched again. Now, the part of the problem, so one reason to integrate it is for this taina. That needs to be integrated. It needs to be part of the actual baking process. The other reason to integrate it is because the Star K mandates, and we would mandate also, that you have no way of knowing when it doesn't work. Like, well, when does it run out?
Right.
So they integrate into the system to the point that if it doesn't work, the whole machine won't work.
So it's like the modern day glow bar, like when something is certified under that hashgacha,
yeah,
you know the glow bar either worked or the bread didn't get baked, basically.
That's the way it's supposed to work.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting.
Does the glow bar reach a certain temperature?
It's supposed to reach a certain temperature. It's supposed to, and that impacts the rest of the plate of the thing as well. How hot is that? There's a bit of a machlokas about the next thing I was going to cover about residual heat. So how hot does the residual heat have to be? So that's 175 or just a little bit warm. I'm not sure about the glow bar if there's a requirement for that.
If a yid was to install a time clock or a time switch for the oven,
a timer.
Yeah.
Ah. So very good. So that is the next thing I was going to cover. Oh, by the way, the other taina on it is from Rav Belsky. This is just coming out of Rabbi Cohn's sefer here. That Rav Belsky said that no, the other issue is that it can't that the description given in the Shulchan Aruch is that well, a non-Jew started the fire and non-Jew is baking. And you come in and toss a little bit of flame in. So Ravelsky said, yeah, that's only after the flame started. But to have the tiny bit of flame there first, before the flame started, he thinks that's not that doesn't qualify for this heter. That's his suggestion. Rav Schechter had some tainas on him based on some other halachos here. But anyways, that was his other that was the other taina that perhaps is against this glow bar. Fine. So what about the issue of timers? So can you, instead of doing that, we have a timer. So full disclosure, that is what we do here, right? So at New York Bagel, so New York Bagel is Pas Yisrael. They have a timer there, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah, apparently, as there is a timer here. So the baking there stops. Some point around, usually finishes baking, depending on the day, 11, 11:30, 12, 12:31, something like that. At some point after he finishes baking, either I come in or sometimes Chaviv Alif is working there, right? And we set the timer for the next day. And
so
the
you
timer,
set it every day?
Yeah, so I set the timer every day.
So you can't set it for like a certain period.
So we'll get to that in a second. So the truth is the timer is also controversial. Okay, so while the Star K is pro glow bar, they are anti timer. The OU is anti glow bar, they are pro timer. Right. So what is the?
Because the mice is not immediate.
Ah, right. Very good. So what is the story with the? Well, why would we be pro or con timers? So there is a. So the way Rabbi Cohn develops here, it is. Let's see, back that down again. Yeah. He talks about in the context of boilers, but it's the same sugya, that there is a ma'aril. There we go. Right. Okay. There is a the Rama says. The Rama says right here. That's it. It's based off of this Rama. This Rama here says v'im nafach be'esh havi kechitui, that if you blow on the fire, that's like chitui. How do you know that blowing on the fire, that blowing anything is sufficient? So this showed up in the Daf Yomi recently, right? It's the favorite sugya in Baba Kama, right? Because the Gemara there talks about an ox is wandering around. There's a concept called sraros, which means that if a pebble comes out from under the ox and squirts out and goes and knocks someone out in the eye, so that's considered to be nezek caused by the animal. So the Gemara there and half says, oh, and by the way, if a animal like runs by causing wind and the wind comes and causes damage, that's also included in sraros. Okay, so based on that, the Mariel says, aha, so what do we see? We see that the wind is considered to be koach gavra. We see that the wind is considered to be the power of a person. So that being the case, so perhaps that's what we're meaning. So that what is the minimal requirement that a person be involved is that they have to have some kind of koach gavra. We need to have some sort of actual impetus from a person. And some raise the question and say, who says that with a timer you are actually creating that, you are causing that? That's considered to be the koach of a person. Why would I say it's not? So there is a famous sugi that pops up a bunch of times, probably most famously in Chulin, with the idea of koach rishon and koach sheni. Maybe also prominently in Sanhedrin. Right, the halacha is if you release a dam, right, a dam of water, right, and all the water comes rushing out, right, and right under the dam is some guy, right, and that guy gets knocked out by the water. So you would be chayiv nezek. But what if it is not the immediate flow of water that causes damage, but rather it's like a secondary cause of water? The first jump is you release the thing and the immediate water comes out. After that, it's all sort of working off of gravity. So the Gemara there distinguishes between what it calls koach rishon and koach sheni. First level, the immediate attack, which we consider connected to that person and considered as if that person did it himself, as opposed to koach sheni, which is something that just sort of happened in the aftermath of what he said. So some suggest that koach rishon is the same thing as nafach, is the concept of blowing. But if it's koach sheni, maybe that's not enough impact from the person. So then what would you say a timer is? So the immediate reaction you could say is, well, a timer is considered koach sheni. A timer is not happening now. A timer is happening down the line. So therefore, maybe that's not considered to be enough of a connection to the action of a person, to the action of the Jew, that we would be able to, call it pas Yisrael. That is the anti-timer position. So the Rav Shechter in his sefer, in sefer Be'ikvei Hatzon. So Rav Shechter, and therefore that's also the reason why this is from the OU, and this has wide ranging applications. But Rav Shechter suggests that, and quoting from his Rebbe, from Rav Salavechik, that the idea of grumma, any time that so what are we essentially talking about? We're talking about that wasn't your action, it was a grumma of your action, right? It's sort of an indirect thing that you did. And therefore, maybe it's separated. So, Rav Salavechik said that any time something is built into the system, we're not going to call it grumma, right? So, if you develop a system that, like a mousetrap, where you, like the game mousetrap, where you do something here and da 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 da, right, and something else happens down the line, so we're not going to call that with the exemption of grumma, assuming that was the way that the system was created, at least within some areas of halacha. So that then has repercussions like across the board. So pretty much anything having to do with is machine made, is that considered to be koach gavra or not, right? Machine matzahs, machine tefillin, right? Machine tzitzis, right? All of these things are all sort of circling back to this debate as to what exactly is the role of a machine, and therefore, and the same thing is going to be applied here. Now, Rav Shechter holds that that's all fine, meaning that is all part of the system, and therefore should work. He says the idea of koach rishon and koach sheni is because there's sort of a separation in that existence. I mean, there's the first wave, and then there's the waves that come after that, which is one is coming because you release the wall, the other one is coming because there's no wall there, right? There's a difference there. But he says, but here, when it comes to a machine, it's all coming because you push the button, right? You push the button, and everything that comes after that is coming because you push the button. So therefore, that's considered to be that would be considered to be the koach of a person. And then the other reason why people are matirit is that there is a famous idea from Rav Chaim Salavechik that he distinguishes between koach and maisa. That sometimes some things you require the koach of a person, and for some things you require the maisa of a person, not necessarily the same. So, like shchita, for example, needs to have the koach of a person. I think that was the example that he gave here. Yeah. Right, there's a few halachos that shchita, netila, sidayim, rechitza, that they have to be done by the koach of a person. Most things just require a maisa of a person. So only a maisa of a person, that perhaps could be done by extension. So therefore, the position of the OU is that, and same thing, by the way, it's not just about timers. The same question is revolving around what's it called? Revolving around remote time. I mean, remote things. Can I push a button here and an oven will turn on, I don't know, in Cherry Hill, for example. Right? So.
Telephone.
What?
Your telephone, you call it in and it turns on the oven.
Or like an app?
Yeah, I mean, right, that's pretty old school. Yes, an app. Right, an app. We went through this at the falafel place, which she didn't want. They wanted everything there to be passed Israel, and they wanted to have an oven for stuff. And we tried, say, can we make a remote starter where, like, every day, 11 o'clock, I'll turn on the oven. So she actually got a Wi-Fi oven. Then we realized that it only works by Wi-Fi. It doesn't work remotely. Or I don't remember what it was, but it was a totally impractical solution. But she ended up finding something with piled lights, and that was all. That ended up being fine. But that is the machlokas. By the way, this is the same machlokas. I remember when I first heard that timers, that the Star K doesn't allow timers. I was talking to my friend at the Star K, Rabbi Holland, and I said, I don't understand. They don't allow grumma. They're machmer on grumma when it comes to Pas Yisrael, but they're mekel on grumma when it comes to the Shabbos mode ovens, right? Because the Shabbos mode ovens, which are really Yontif mode ovens, do Chabad people hold by the Star K Shabbos mode oven stuff?
Yeah, to do Shabbos. So.
What? To even to allow on Yontif adjusting temperature.
How do you adjust the temperature?
So first of all, they call it Shabbos mode, but they admit that it's Yontif mode. Just the company said nobody knows what Yontif is, they know what Shabbos is, so we'll call it Shabbos mode. But it's really Yontif mode. That's really the purpose of it. Mm-hmm. And what they did was, their Shabbos mode ovens mean several things. Number the first thing that it means is that the automatic shutoff doesn't apply. So that's a very good thing. Everybody agrees with that. The next thing that it holds, that it does is that opening the door isn't going to affect the temperature, the amount of power being used inside. Also a good thing, right? The third thing that they did is where the whole controversy started, is because Rav Heinemann said that if you that we're going to put a delay on the buttons, we're going to make the buttons that you could adjust the temperature, but you're not going to adjust the temperature right away. You're going to adjust the temperature. It's going to create a sign that every 3 seconds will be picked up on, and therefore the temperature is going to be going up or down based on grumma, not based on your direct.
This is like how they action. Made the Shabbos phone.
Right.
It's like supposed to be a similar idea.
Right. Like all of these delays. Input. Right.
So this is how on Yontif you could press an electric button to turn up the heat.
Right.
You're saying?
Right. That is that's their suggestion. That's what the Star K problem is.
Delay factor, not just any button.
Right.
You need to have a delay factor.
There would need to, right. That's what Shabbos mode does. It builds in a delay such that it's not going to. It shuts off the screen. Right. The panel isn't on, and you just push the buttons up and down, and it will.
How do you know what temperature you're putting it to?
You guess. I don't know.
Shabbos mode has always seemed very unsafe to me, but that's a side point.
I mean, you could put in a thermometer. You could have a thermometer in the oven to tell you.
Like a manual thermometer.
Yeah, but it's not necessary. We're not trying to find a, getting within 5 degrees. It's more about, like, turning the oven on and off. That's what they're doing. So they're running that based on grumma. So that's what the OU chevra is like. You can't do that, right? that's a system, right? If you're putting grumma into the system, that's not going to that's not a grumma anymore. That all of a sudden becomes machmir. So that is this machlokas. Now beyond the issue with the timers, then there's a question of why do you have to do it every day? Can I just set the timer to just go on at 5 o'clock every morning, and it shuts off at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? Like, why do we have to go ahead and do it every day? So that already, some suggest, or Schoenbach has this. Some say you could, right? You said it. It's not turning on all because. Schoenbach, however, doesn't hold that. Schoenbach says that once you've gone through one usage, right? So then it's no longer connected to your mice anymore. Now you could argue back on it, but that's what we try to be machmer for. Try to be machmer for that opinion that once that we try to set the timer every day for the next morning, as opposed to just setting it going ad infinitum. Now what if we forget one night? Right. This is a. So I mean, I have gone to New York Bagels at in my pajamas to do this. They're like, oh my gosh, I forgot to go. It doesn't happen too often anymore, but it does. Or like on our way back from New York, I'll instead of turning up Lancaster, we're now going down City. I was like, why are you going down City? We're stopping at Nick. Right. So that's like the thing in our family. So. I have ended up there in some rather strange hours. What happens if you actually do forget? So it depends on the day of the week. Most of the days of the week, we would A, rely on that, and B, we would rely on the residual heat which we're about to get to. I mean, the oven stays hot for a pretty a lengthy amount of time. The problem is, however, on Sunday, or any day that he's closed. If he's closed, then he's closed for over 24 hours, then the assumption is that the oven pretty much has lost all its heat, or has lost all its heat, and therefore we would, in theory, put up a sign saying, you know, bagels today are not pas yisrael, or something like that.
Is having the standing pilot light there not...
If there is a standing pilot light, he doesn't have a... It's not a pilot light, it's an electric starter.
For those who have a standing pilot light, so then the guy can come in and just turn up the oven.
Right. So most of these... most places do work that way, yeah. I mean, the problem is a lot of... Of all the wonderful things that we have to thank Jimmy Carter for, one of them is that he ushered pilot lights. Right, nowadays, right, everything is like, right, have those starters, right? So now commercial ovens are more likely to have pilot lights. But he ushered pilot lights saying it wastes gas. Why do you need a pilot light on all the time? So that caused all sorts of problems for us. Bishalakum, Pasakum, Yantif.
That was a halachic decision? Not to use a pilot light?
No, no. Jimmy Carter? No, that was a political decision. He was worried about global warming in the 70s, right? Or losing, you know, or that we're going to run out of carbon, whatever. Right, but nowadays it's, if you get... most home things do not have pilot lights anymore.
Shalom Pizza is a
pilot light. Right, so the older... places do, and commercial places, commercial things more often do. Like the big stoves
heaters.
They have in the back of the things, a lot of those have pilot lights underneath.
Water heaters? Not
what about water heaters?
No, the new ones don't have pilot lights.
What's the difference? Like, I'm picturing my water heater at home, which is what, like, maybe 5 years old.
It's just direct ignition. It's basically, when there's a call for heat, it sends a spark to the... which opens the gas valve, and when that's...
It's not a constant flame burning?
No, anymore, no.
Because whenever I take the little thing off, I see a little...
I thought...
You might
still have an old one.
The other thing is there's direct ignition where it lights the burner, and then there's also when there's a call for heat, so you'll have a pilot light that will light on the call for heat, and then that pilot light will light the burner. So you'll still have a pilot light... but it won't be a standing pilot light, which is continuously on.
I see.
That makes things worse for Yontif.
So yeah, but it's on Yontif, it's automatic. Problem as well. Unless you have a standing
pilot.
Or when
you turn it on.
Right.
It's just lighting a smaller flame before the big flame. It's still the same ignition system. All
right. Need to figure that out. Okay. So one or two other points. So the other thing here is the idea of residual heat. So that also is mentioned in Shulchan Aruch here in Sif Yud. Imafu b'tanur al yedei ovik l'chavim three times, yom echad, v'yichshir atanur the first two times, the third time is good also. Why is that good? So so he mentions here, afilu bo kama yamim hakol mutar mikoach hechshir rishon, that if the... if the tanner didn't sit for 24 hours without being burnt in it, meaning the assumption is that there's still heat in it, still it could go for many days and it could go on and on that way, so long as as long as there's still residual heat. How hot does that residual heat need to be? So there, Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying, apparently he quotes here in the book that Rebelsky asked Shlomo Zalman this. Shlomo Zalman said 175 degrees. That seems pretty hot. But most others say as long as it is just warm. There is a comment in the Darki Tshuva, right, the Munkacher Reva, who said that you shouldn't do this more than a week. It's unclear why he would say that. Maybe because a week includes Shabbos, and Shabbos was off. I'm not sure. But the Rebelsky did hold, at least for the OU, that things should not be left on for more than a year. Meaning the whole purpose is that you have some kind of hecker, and if it's just going to be lit, and then it's going to be that way for the next 30 years, so that it becomes a joke. Or maybe it becomes a joke. So therefore he did require... these pilot lights to be turned off and on every once in a while.
Sounds like a question maybe on the globe R2. Do you
lose maybe. I think the argument for that is that that's... I mean, you could see it. Like it's... Maybe that makes it a little bit better. Also, that was with regards to that. Okay, so one note here at the end. So what is the halacha here about the stuff getting mixed? So it's talking about mixed in. So the Machaber says, Kusach shol v'kolchavim, mutter v'in choshen l'pas of v'kolchavim shibada. We don't have to worry about the pas palter that is inside of Kusach, because it's already considered batel to whatever else is there. Whenever there is pas palter that got mixed in with other foods, batel berov, bein belach, bein biyavish, aval aser la'ariv kedei la'achla. But you're not allowed to mix it in order to eat it. So that's a couple of interesting things here, right? If it gets mixed in, it's mutter. But you're not allowed. It sounds like you're not allowed to mix it to eat it, meaning sort of like in mevatlan isur lecharchila, like we talked about in taruvas, right? You can't purposely go ahead and do it. So that's a shame because in theory, right, the whole idea, like breadcrumbs, right? So breadcrumbs, pas Yisrael people are generally machmer on pas Yisrael breadcrumbs too, right? So why can't we say, well, yeah, but breadcrumbs don't make up the rov. Breadcrumbs by definition are crumbs, right? They're not going to be the rov. So the answer is yeah, but if you're making it, so then you're making it l'charchila in that way. But however, I was wondering, you could ask your Chabad Poskim whether they would allow this or not. He says, but maybe if you came to my house and we made breadcrumb chicken, so I didn't do, right? It's not my yisur, I'm doing okay. And now we give you the chicken, right? So the chicken has breadcrumbs on it, but okay, I did it the heter, right? So we wouldn't allow this certification level, but on a private level, it could be that there is a significant room to be makel on these things. Even if one is machmer on pas Yisrael, it could be in that kind of situation one could be makel. You've heard of this, or you're not?
Yeah,
we discussed
a little bit about this. We did these halachas kind of outside. We did them through Chochmas Adam, and there they talk about. Situations where like somebody brings you a gift of bread or you're going to eat with a family member or mm-hmm. something and it's like you don't want to embarrass them, can do what
right.
but you generally are strict. It's in the same
right.
realm.
So I would even argue even outside the realm of I don't want to embarrass them, there might be able to be makel.
Right.
Only for this issue of bittel.
Because of the bittel issue, right. Yeah.
So I don't remember the specific rabbi, but I've heard there are those who rely on the idea of heating bread up as a way of improving it,
mm-hmm.
and that it becomes pas Yisrael.
So
I wonder.
Yeah, actually, that's the thing that I didn't understand what I meant by writing here, but I didn't mean that. Yeah.
Breadcrumbs are being improved by the cooking.
Potentially. So you have to know how breadcrumbs are made, which I'm not sure. You have to see, like, is it actually bread and then turns into crumbs, or is it really, like, not edible at any point?
It's bread that turns into crumbs.
Even the real commercial. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was in YU in yeshiva, like they had like they used to have croutons for the soup, and you could see pretty clearly. Like I recognized that from the bagel I was sitting over there 2 days ago.
Like the way they make the loaves is kind of different, and it's not like a commercial thing of bread that you would buy, but mm-hmm. it's like bread that
right.
they make, and then they. Stay. The thing with breadcrumbs is that they're like kind of dried out and sort of stale. Does that have, any?
I'm not sure, but it's still edible. So generally, what we say, and this comes up on the other end with regards to par-big things. So Giant here, a lot of what they don't make a lot of the stuff. They're getting it what they call par-baked, which is that it's 50% of the way done, partially baked, right? And now they're going to go and do the rest. What if the whole thing is pas palter? And now, it was totally non-Jewish involved, and now a Jew is coming in, or a Jewish oven, or however we're doing it, and baking at that point. So does that work? So generally, the assumption in this area is if you are actually improving it. Now, if it already was like all good, and you're just not really doing that much, so that's not going to help, right? So just taking it that's fully edible and saying, I'm going to turn it to toast, so that we don't assume. But if it's not fully baked,
say that is okay.
What?
This sheet would say that is okay, that making it into toast is improving it.
Even if it was already fine as it is?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not
For what's worth, my dad asked Shraga this question like just 2 weeks ago, and Shraga said that we don't hold by that.
Shraga, who's Shraga?
Sherman.
Oh, okay.
What, asked him which question?
About reheating the pas halter to make it pas yisrael, and he said we're not knowing that way.
Right. I think we generally said there would have to be an actual improvement to made it to the point that it wasn't really edible before. Now, one more point is that an example here with Nick's bagels. So let's say there was one day that I didn't, and we put up a sign saying it's no longer, today the bagels aren't pas yisrael. And they say, hey, wait a second, does that mean I have to kosher the oven now? So we generally assume not, that we don't have to worry about bleos. Now, we do worry about it in Bishul Akum, right? In Simi Kuf Yud Gimel, so there, it's Machlokas Ra'ah and Rashba, we pass them like the Rashba, that we do worry about bleos when it comes to Bishul Akum. So why all of a sudden here are we generally not? So some are Meduyak in that Ramah. The Ramah said, right, anytime you mix in Pas Akum with other eatings, it's Batal Barov, right? But you're not allowed to mix it in order to eat it. Right, so what does that mean? That means mixing in order to eat it. That means taking breadcrumbs and putting it on chicken, right? But to say that that blios coming out of an oven is mixing in order to eat it, right? So that's pretty far fetched. I don't think we assume that you're getting blios purposely because I want whatever tastes in the pot to come back out, right? That's general. That I don't think that we assume that way. So therefore, I think the general practice is that we're not kosher for blios of pas palter. Only machmer for the mashas itself. All right, so those are some of the Pas Yisrael highlights of Simon 50 days.
Thank you.